This is The Rock, Bill Watts. Welcome to Newsmakers. On the show today, we have Fox broadcaster Joe Buck, Nationals broadcaster Charlie Slows, MLB.com columnist Richard Justice, and Brewers manager Craig Counsell. We start with Buck, who's not afraid to express his opinions on the game of baseball. Enjoy the podcast.
I'm with one of the best play-by-play voices in baseball and in football. His name is Joe Buck. Joe, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Good time to check in, I guess, as we're on the verge of the month of June, and I think we pretty much have an idea of what these teams are in 2017.
Oh, no question about it.
And there are a lot of surprises
across baseball
this year.
No doubt. Speaking of that, who are the biggest surprises you think? I think Houston's one for sure.
I think Houston's almost unstoppable at this point. I mean, the record that they're putting together is, it's eye-popping to look at what they're doing in the AL West alone. But I think across baseball, you're looking at a team that's built for 2017 and beyond. They're young, they're good, they have the pitching. I think they're maybe a starter away from having a real tough postseason type rotation. There, to me, there's a big difference between, you know, having the ability to get through a regular season and then lining up in a postseason series. I think you need to have two or three really good starters, and I think the Astros could use one more. But lineup-wise, they're young, they're good. I think you start to see the youth in baseball, and I think the Yankees would be on that list too, which, you know, they've always been kind of the veteran team, the older guys, the grizzled players, and now they're young and they're dangerous. I think you see that across baseball. Baseball has become a young man's game, and I've said it before, Bill, that then when they took amphetamines out of this game, and they've done a really good job of taking that drug out of the game, it's meant that younger players, younger teams have more deeper into the year, and these older guys, these older players run out of gas. I think it's a real thing in baseball, and so the Yankees are a huge surprise. And on the negative, the Cubs. I mean, I did not see this coming. They're under 500 as you and I talk right now, and you know, they're looking for somebody to take the lead in that lineup, which right now is full of a lot of easy outs.
Now, I know it's June and everything, but do you think the Cubs can come back?
Yeah, I do. I think they're going to have to make some moves, though. And that's hard to believe for a team that won 103 games last year and won the World Series and overcame the curse and all the other stuff that goes with it. That was a really tough team a year ago. And, you know, they need Addison Russell to look like Addison Russell. They need Kyle Schwarber to hit. I know he hit a home run last night in San Diego, but his average is under 200. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody saw that coming either. So they have legit players who are not playing well right now, not hitting. And until they do, they're going to be what they are, which is basically a 500 team.
Now, we've seen the Dodgers. They've been really hot of late. What do you think about them?
I like them. I just got a chance to do their game on Saturday, and they're another good young club. I mean, this Cody Bellinger is the real deal, and I don't believe anybody had him circled as somebody who this early would be ready to go. But, you know, he's setting records for the Dodgers in their incredible franchise history for the fastest guy to 10 home runs and 25 RBIs, and he is well surpassed that with what he's done in the last couple of games. So they're also a good mix of the young guys that I'm talking about, and then the vets. People were screaming out there for Chase Utley to get released after he hit under 100 in April,
right?
And now he couldn't be any more hot. And you've got that veteran leadership that he brings, and a good double play combo with Seager. I think they have a really good manager.
That's
who
true.
Gets the most out of his roster. So, they are legitimately good, and in my opinion, the team to beat in the NL West, despite the way Colorado's looked at the beginning of the year, and Arizona, too.
Now, Joe, I got to ask you this. Now, you had the pleasure of doing the play-by-play of two great events, which were the 2016 World Series and this last Super Bowl. And how great was it to cover those events, and would you rank them as the best ever?
Yeah, I would. Especially, you know, take the Super Bowl first. I've done five now, and I've kind of had one in every category. I've had a really close one, which was the New England Giants' first version at the end of the 07 season.
Right.
Had a blowout, which was the one in New York between Denver and Seattle when Seattle crushed the Broncos. And then this one was trending that way, and we were in the third quarter thinking, you know, this is going to be a dud. And then a couple of decisions later, and Tom Brady doing what Tom Brady can do, they were unstoppable. And it felt like had they touched the ball five more times, they were going to score five more times as the game hadn't ended in overtime. And that just, you know, proves his greatness. And then, yeah, I think the baseball side of it, I just don't think it's ever going to get better in my career. And I don't say that because of the fan side of it. I think because of the historical significance of the Cubs not having even been in a World Series since 1945. We know hadn't won it since 08. Mm-hmm. But to win it, to be down 3-1, to come back and get that win the way they did, to blow a lead, win it in 10 innings, I don't see how it's going to be improved upon. I guess Cleveland's next, and that would be fun to witness and sensational. But I just think because the Cubs hadn't even been there,
mm-hmm.
and people try to compare that to 04 with the Red Sox, and I think the comparisons are pretty good, but at least the Red Sox had been to the World Series in 86 and had been there in 67. And so there was some history there that with regard to the Cubs that we just hadn't seen in a lot of our lifetimes. And that's what made it so cool.
Joe, you have a new partner in John Smoltz. How fun was it to be with him last year during the World Series? And
I was blown away. I was blown away. He worked so hard, but made it seem so easy. And when I look over at his notes, I'm really good. That's how I got through high school, was looking over at somebody else's work. But he prepared for these games like he was going to pitch against the Cubs and against the Indians. And for a guy who was obviously a Hall of Famer, but did it as a starter, did it as a closer, knows what it's like to be on the mound in a Game 7. I mean, there's just so much personal history for somebody like John that he can rely on and tell you, well, this is what it's like. This is what it feels like to stand out there right now. And then to do it in a way that's easy for people to understand. I was just so proud of him. And I guess he's kind of the good luck charm. He did one. He got the Cubs in the World Series against the Indians and 7 games and extra innings in Game 7. I told him afterward, I said, John, I've done 19 of these now, and let me tell you, it's not going to get better than that.
You had McCarver for a long time, Tim McCarver, that is. How would you compare the two?
Well, a lot of the same things I said about John apply to Tim. They just apply from the other side of the battery. You know, for a guy that was calling signs and trying to think through a game, you know, certainly in the 60s with those great Cardinal teams and was the catcher for Bob Gibson and was the catcher for Steve Carlton, that's what I think you can't get with just your, you know, run-of-the-mill analyst. I don't care what the sport is. Mm-hmm. Somebody who has won when it counts the most and somebody who's had the pressure on them and can speak it to the rest of us who have never been in that situation. So along those lines, I saw a lot of similarities, a lot of the same work ethic. You know, somebody who wasn't afraid to give an opinion. I think as I look back on my 18 years with Tim Carver, what stands out to me is that he was never afraid of giving a well-informed opinion, even if it wasn't popular
mm-hmm.
or if it wasn't going to make him, you know, gain fans down in the clubhouse or in the manager's office. If he felt it, because he had researched it, thought it through, then he said it. And I admire that. I think those are the best analysts that believe in what they say because they know what their opinion is thought out. And it's not meant to shock or get attention. It's just meant to be right. And that's what I admired the most about Tim.
Joe, you've been around the game of baseball a long time. Now, you talked about how you loved to see the youngsters get involved in baseball, which is the case. Any changes you would like to see in this game?
Well, I share the commissioner's desire to see these games speed up a lot, not just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I've seen that happen is when, and I could be, you know, I guess I could be dead wrong about this, but I can tell you where I see it,
mm-hmm.
is with the strike zone. I think the strike zone's too small, and I think there's going to have to be an adjustment period if they ever go to expanding the strike zone. And here's why I say this. Of all the games we cover during the course of the year, the All-Star game is the best-paced game. Despite all the changes, you know, everybody has to get in the game for the most part. You've got a new shortstop every other inning, new right fielder, new hitter, new pitcher coming in. And yet it's the best-paced game we cover all year long because hitters go up there ready to swing. They don't want to strike out. They see a good pitch. They're facing guys that are bringing their best stuff right out of the bullpen. And they go up there ready to hack. And when guys are up there ready to swing and strikes are called, the game moves. And when there's ball one just outside, ball two just high, foul ball, ball three low, strike two, it takes forever. And I think it's a legitimate concern with Major League Baseball's front office. And I think they're going to figure out a way to get the game expedited. But until they do, I think it's a real problem. And believe me, I'm the biggest hypocrite of all because I work at a network where when we show up in the postseason, our breaks are whatever they are, 25, 30
yes.
seconds longer in the postseason. But I think on the field, the only way to get the game moving faster is to call strikes. Everybody would adjust. Guys would go up there ready to hit, and that's when I think the game moves the best.
Joe, I remember when I was young, and you know, in the 1960s, early 70s, I remember, you know, the games used to go quick. It didn't matter what league it was. And how did it get this way, you know, where it's too long? And I covered the Nationals for a long time, and those games were long. How did it get that way?
Well, I remember Jim Palmer once saying that with the strike zone the way it is, he couldn't pitch in the big leagues. Now, obviously, that was an overstatement, and Jim Palmer is Jim Palmer in any era. But I look at some of the, you know, strikes that I see in replays from the 60s with Bob Gibson and the aforementioned Tim McCarver.
Mm-hmm.
And the pitches are up, and guys are swinging, or they're called strikes. To me, it was a different strike zone. And it was an era, I mean, even into the 80s, early 90s, where starting pitchers were going deeper into games. You know, we ran a highlight the other day in one of our games, Mike Socha hitting a ninth-inning home run off Doc Gooden. I guess that was 88.
Right.
And he hit the home run off Dwight when Dwight was in the 130s with his pitch count. And I think we're just in a real specialized time where starters don't go as deep into games. Right-handers are coming up, bringing the righty. Here comes a big lefty. Go get the left-hander, the specialist. Now bring your closer in. You know, Goose Gossage and Al Roboski, if you want to bring his name up, Bruce Sutter, those guys were not three-out specialists for saves.
No.
They were Gossage, you know, it's what ticks him off so much. He was three innings.
Correct.
Sometimes more. And I think all of that maneuvering and specialty work has led to the game's pace being severely altered.
We all know how great your dad was as a person and as a broadcaster. Could you tell me the advice he gave you that still sticks with you today?
Yeah, I remember when he was when I was going to Louisville for my first year in 1989, and he and I drove from spring training back north. And he said, you know, you have to remember that as you're going into this, you've been watching Major League Baseball your whole life. These are, in some cases, kids trying to make the big leagues or veterans that are trying to hang on. Unless you feel like you could make the play 10 times out of 10, you can't get on these guys. You can't criticize because the game is so much easier from where we sit. Mm-hmm. And I think that applies to the big leagues too. I mean, what am I going to say that I can't reference a tough ground ball I fielded in high school? I think you have to respect how good these guys are. Right. And beyond that, you know, it was more than just how to broadcast or, you know, where to go or not go verbally during the course of a game. It was how to be a person, how to be a nice guy, and how to treat people right and greet people with a smile. And doesn't matter what job they hold in and around the game, you're lucky to be there. And I saw a guy who had every reason, especially around home in St. Louis, to be an egomaniac, and he was the complete opposite of that.
Right.
He treated everybody like they were his long-lost best friend, and I just saw it personally. It's not something that I was told about my dad. I watched him do it. And so those are the lessons I learned from him. Way more important than calling a baseball game. It's just how to be a good person and, you know, leave every encounter you have, leave the other person, you know, wanting more because they enjoyed their time with you.
And, you know, for a person, I lived in St. Louis for 2 years, and I can say firsthand that you did a great job. You followed in your father's footsteps big time. And my next question to you is, do you realize that you are a Hall of Famer in the future, and your father and yourself could be the first father and son team?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. But I do remember this. The day my dad went into the Hall of Fame was the most proud I've ever seen him. And I don't know that I've ever said that before, but I saw him in 1987 in that summer go in. Billy Williams was a player that went in with him, and he was on top of the world. He gave his life to baseball, even at the end, when he wasn't his healthiest. He had Parkinson's, he had diabetes, he had vertigo at times, he had complications with a pacemaker, but nothing would stop him from going down to the ballpark. Mm-hmm. And that's what gave him life. And as silly as that may sound, he loved being around the players. He loved being around the batting cage. He loved, you know, even with Parkinson's and not feeling well and shaking and everything else that went with it, he wanted to be in it and around it. And I saw that as a kid. And so the greatest gift he ever gave me was letting it show how much he loved what he did. And that's what I think lit the fire in me. And when you see a parent that would rather work than be off and, you know, was going to work with a smile on his or her face, mm-hmm. I think it's only natural that the kid then, you know, at some point starts looking up to that and wanting to be that same type person when they get older. And so that is hands down the greatest thing my dad ever gave me, was this love for baseball, love for the art of broadcasting. And, man, I just don't think anybody did it any better.
Final question, what's ahead for Joe Buck? I know you have a book out that came out not too long ago. What's ahead other than that and the All-Star game?
Yeah, I mean, between now and the All-Star game is the U.S. Open. So my focus starts to shift to golf. I mean, it's something you have to keep up with all year long, but now it's the two-week stretch here where we get ready for the 117th U.S. Open. It'll be my third, and I think as a group we've made strides every year, so I can't wait. It's at Erin Hills in Wisconsin. I think it'll be a great championship, and that's fun to be a part of. And then I go from that and kind of turn back around and go back to baseball and do the All-Star game. So it's a fun time. Summers are great, and I'm lucky to do what I do.
Joe Buck, listen, thank you so much. I had a great time, and hope to do it again.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
My next guest is Charlie Slows, who explains why Bryce Harper was suspended and the Nationals are still one of the best teams in the major leagues. Enjoy the podcast.
On the phone is one of the best play-by-play radio voices in all of baseball. His name is Charlie Slows. He's the play-by-play voice of the Nationals. Charlie, thank you so much for being on the show.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Bill.
We got to start off with the Bryce Harper-Hunter Strickland brawl. We know what happened. Four games for Bryce Harper, six games for Hunter Strickland. How do you feel? Do you think the verdict was right? How do you feel about that?
Well, Strickland obviously threw at him with intent, and you know the ruling that came down from Major League Baseball shows that, since he got a longer suspension than Harper did. But it's never equitable when it's between a relief pitcher and an everyday position player. He gets four games. And now Bryce is appealed, and so is Hunter Strickland. But if Bryce were to serve four games, that's 36 innings. And a reliever suspended for six games who pitches maybe an inning at a time, you might be talking six innings over six games or days when he doesn't appear in a game at all. So it's just not equitable from that standpoint. A lot of people that I've talked to think that Strickland should have got a longer suspension. Obviously, they felt that Harper's reaction, what he did, was heat of the moment, knowing that it was blatantly obvious to him and everybody else that Strickland threw at him over something that happened 2.5 years ago.
Now, that was my next question, Charlie. Now, Charlie, you know me. You know, I hold grudges. But, you know, I hold grudges from years ago. But did you think Hunter Strickland should have held this grudge? Now, Hunter Strickland was upset that Harper hit two home runs. But also, too, Harper was kind of taunting him while running the bases. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I didn't think there was anything after the first home run. But Strickland stared Bryce down on the first home run and then stared him down when he hit the second home run. And I think Bryce just looked back at him. And then really anything that Bryce had shouted came from the dugout after the home run. And again, Strickland, his team won the series and went on to win the World Series. I know they hadn't faced each other up until now, but I think everybody was stunned that there would be something that would come out of that this far removed from it. But, you know, my broadcast partner, Dave Jagler, he thought something like this would happen, almost like you could see it coming. It's just Strickland telegraphed it, and when you look at his numbers, he doesn't walk many, he doesn't hit many. So his command is usually pretty good. If he misses, he misses in the strike zone. So, you know, is there a place for all of it? I mean, if you're Bryce Harper, you can't be a punching bag. I think some people respect what he did, the way he did it in the heat of the moment. And I think a lot of people that look at this, even from the Giants standpoint, and see that Buster Posey didn't react. Michael Morris, former National, was really trying to get Bryce out of there. And, you know, one of the repercussions of all of this is I talked with Michael Morris around the batting cage before the second game of the series. And he ended up in a collision with Jeff Samardzija, who was the starting pitcher for game two of the series.
Right.
And Morris ended up with the worst of it, although he felt fine. It seemed when he talked to us that he was a little bit sore. Wound up before the game that he wasn't feeling well, and they placed him on the concussion list, the seven-day DL for concussions.
Right.
So, again, Hunter Strickland's hurt his own team in that regard.
Right. You know, the bullpen is finally stabilizing. Kota Glover is now the closer. And how do you feel about this bullpen? Do you feel that is really stabilizing?
Well, certainly when you bring in a guy and he's able to close it out in the ninth inning, that's a whole different story from what the Nationals were dealing with in the first month and a half of the season. Plus now they're getting better performances from Blake Treinen. They're getting better performances from Oliver Perez and also from Sean Kelly the last few times up. And Matt Albers, who was a non-roster player, wasn't on the roster when the season started, has been maybe their most consistent reliever. So the fact that the starters are going deeper into the games, Dusty's having to go later and later to the bullpen instead of earlier and earlier, having to get 12 or 15 outs sometimes when a starter was done in the fifth inning, it just bodes well that he doesn't have to get the same people up every day or multiple days. I mean, last night's game or game two of the series, he got Albers up, used him for the part of the seventh and the eighth inning, and then Kota Glover the night before, he used Oliver Perez and Sean Kelly combined on the eighth inning after he got seven innings from Tanner Roark. So that's a big, big difference when you don't have to go to the well as many times with the same people. You can get them the rest between appearances. But, you know, that all comes back to your starting pitching allowing you to do that.
Talk about the job Dusty Baker has done for most of the year without having a bullpen. I mean, he has a bullpen now, but for most of that, the team has managed to win games without a bullpen.
Well, I think they were fortunate that the offense was so hot in the first month and a half of the season that they outhit any deficiencies, days when they made some fielding errors, days when they didn't pitch well. Even when they had blown leads, some of them, they came back and won those games, even after the bullpen had blown the lead for the starter. So I think your offense can carry you a long way, but there are cycles during the season where Dusty has always talked about your offense will carry you. Some days it's your pitching, some days it's your defense, and some days it's your relief pitching. So they've gotten a little bit of everything, but truly the way it started out for the bullpen, when you look at they won, 32 of their first 51 games, 32 of 19, is pretty amazing.
Yes, it is. And, I mean, talk about the job Dusty has done. You know, do you think he deserves at least an extension or at least talk about an extension?
Well, we haven't heard anything. Dusty doesn't talk about it. I don't think he's concerned about it. If there's discussions about it, it's happened behind closed doors. And it wouldn't surprise me at any point in time if they made an announcement. It wouldn't surprise me if it was later in the year or even at the end of the season. I mean, Dusty is, you know, is secure financially. It's not about that for him. He wants to manage. He wants to win a World Series. I think he has, you know, thoughts about going to the Hall of Fame as manager.
Right. You know, how good is this team? Charlie, you know, as I look at it and I watch it every day, you know, in some ways it's better than the 2012 team, the 14 team, or even the 16 team. I think this team is better right now.
Well, offensively, this is probably the best club. When you look at Harper, Zimmerman with his comeback year, he's doing everything better offensively. Running the bases, he's better without that plantar fasciitis bothering him. He looks stronger, leaner, more power. And then you combine that with Harper in front of him and Murphy behind him. And you go down the order to Rendon and Wieters. Even with the loss of Adam Eaton, this is still a very deep lineup and maybe the deepest one they've had.
Who's the biggest surprise for the Nationals so far, you think? Wieters is better than I thought.
Well, obviously, it has to be Ryan Zimmerman coming off all the injuries and the doubt that people had about where he'd be or where he was going in his career. I mean, this is like a turn the clock back for him. Tremendous power to all fields, able to drive in runs, able to put him back in between the two left-handed hitters. Harper and Murphy has been huge for the balance of this club and you know, helps when other teams who have left-handers in the bullpen try and match up, having that big right-handed bat, there's a big power threat in between them, changes everything.
The trade deadline's coming up, but with Cota Glover pitching well, do you really need another bullpen player? Or what do you need?
Well, it's still, you know, we're talking about just the beginning of June. I think how they perform the next month will give them a better idea. Dusty Baker said, let's see how Cota Glover does when he pitches 3 times in 4 days, 5 times in 7. And, you know, so far, so good. If the other guys improve from their rocky starts, it gives you less and less of a need. But, you know, you can never have too much pitching. You never know when somebody's going to go down. They've been waiting for Sammy Solis to come back since early in the year. So it wouldn't surprise me if they were to get another reliever or two, another bench player, that kind of thing. Same needs they've had or tried to fill in other years when they've been in this position.
Charlie, what about Gio Gonzalez? I mean, it seems like now he's going deep in games. If he gets in trouble, he somehow gets out of it now compared to last year or even the year before. Talk about the job Gio Gonzalez has done.
Yeah, you know, that's been the big difference. You know, he's pitched with men on base. He's made big pitches when he's needed to. And Dusty Baker has shown the confidence, even when he gets up to a high pitch count, that he doesn't necessarily have the bullpen throwing behind him and is letting him get deeper into the games. I think Gio, just knowing him for a while, you know, became a dad last year. I think he's just very settled, very, very happy in his life. And you don't see some of the anxiety in game that maybe you saw before when he'd get into situations. He seems more at ease. Maybe Matt Wieters, who's caught him most of the time, has been a help with that. But he certainly seems to be improved in these stressful situations, being able to get out of it and get deeper into ball games. There's no question about that.
And the final one, Michael Taylor. You know, I always said if you throw him a breaking ball, he's toast. But Michael Taylor has proven me dead wrong. He's having a great year. I know he's into like the 260s or low 270s, but talk about the job he's done.
Well, defensively, he's terrific in center field. Offensively, you know, I think this time around, he's taking advantage of the playing time, able to catch up to fastballs, and I think he's been more aggressive, taking less pitches. There'll be guys who'll get him out on fastballs, get him out on sliders like anybody else, but to this point, he's been much more consistent. He's got some real big hits by getting the bat on the ball, putting it in play. Strikeout numbers down, ball in play is up with speed and power. That's certainly going to help.
Charlie Slows, listen, thank you so much, and you have a great year.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Good to talk with you.
My next guest is writer Richard Justice, who explains why the Astros are one of the best teams in the major leagues. Enjoy the podcast.
The Houston Astros are the hottest team in baseball, and who would know them better than Richard Justice, MLB.com's columnist. Richard, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Bill.
Richard, I'm not going to lie to you. I did not expect this great start from the Astros. Now, I thought they had the hitting. Pitching-wise, I thought, nah, you know, who cares? But talk about how this great start, this great start has been for the Astros, and why are they such a great team?
You know, I don't think any of us could have seen 21 games over 500, and certainly not an 11-game lead in the division. And some of that has to do with things haven't worked out for Seattle and Texas and the way that we thought it might. Here's where the Astros are, though. Just a little background is when Jim Crane bought the team in December 2011, he said, I'm going to hire a general manager who's great at the draft. Jeff Luno had great drafts in St. Louis, and I'm going to give him the time to do it right. It was a complete teardown, and it's really painful to do that, Bill. They lost 100 games 3 years in a row. I mean, you lose fans, you lose TV ratings. Yes. It is really painful. But what he did was accumulate a ton of young talent. I think they surprised themselves by making the postseason in 2015. And this offseason was just a go-for-it mode. They go out and they get old guys, basically. They get Carlos Beltran and Brian, or veteran guys, I should say, Carlos Beltran, Brian McCann, Josh Reddick, Charlie Morton, Nori Aoki. And they just felt it was their time to win, that their young core, Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, George Springer, were ready to win. And, you know, it's one thing to win, and they're winning, but they are a really exciting team to watch. Altuve, Correa, Springer play with certain energy. They have a center fielder named Jake Marisnik, who's been fabulous. And, you know, they have probably the deepest lineup in baseball. And then, and the bullpen is interesting. They gave up a bunch of young players to get Ken Giles from the Phillies to be their closer. And a year ago, the narrative on that trade was, well, that trade sucks for Houston because he gave up too much.
Right.
Now, a year later, Giles is so good that in Philly they're going, well, that trade sucks. Our guys gave up, didn't get enough for Ken Giles. And the other two relievers who've been fantastic, Will Harris, I think he's been with three organizations, never got healthy, comes to Houston, gets healthy, develops a cutter, and has been great, as good as any reliever in the top six, seven relievers in baseball the last 2 years, made the All-Star team last year. And the other guy, Chris Davinsky, mm-hmm. who is a starter in the minor leagues, but they found out if you put him in a relief role, his velocity ticks up. And, Bill, he's amazing to watch. He throws a 93-94-mile-an-hour fastball, and he throws an 82-mile-an-hour changeup, and the arm action is exactly the same. And he is, I mean, when you start going down the list of guys who deserve to make the All-Star team, he's right there. And then the biggest thing probably is that Dallas Keuchel and Lance McCullers are healthy. I think they're 17-3 in their starts. And they probably would have made the playoffs last year if those two guys had been healthy. They've been healthy this year. And been great. You know, there's some questions about the rest of the rotation, but so far their strengths have been able to overcome their weaknesses.
Oh, no question. And, you know, another acquisition was, Josh Reddick. I mean, I mean, this guy strikes out a lot, but this guy has some discipline now, and he doesn't strike out as much as he used to. Talk about him.
Yeah, and it's usage, too. You know, I mean, A.J. Hinch has always loved him. Loves the way he plays. He can play. Well, you basically have, when you have Jake Marisnik and Springer and Reddick out there, you have a bunch of guys that are all capable of playing center field. But, look, he doesn't hit left-handed pitching very well, so why force it? You take what he does, and what he does is really good defense, really good on the bases, and really good against right-handed pitching. So, you know, I think that's part of, you know, what they do with their pitchers. Pitch usage is a big deal. If your slider's your best pitch, if your curveball, I think they threw the Rays, the Dodgers, and the Astros threw more curveballs than anybody.
if a curveball is your best pitch, as in the case of Lance McCullers, throw curveballs.
Right. And, you know, the trade deadline is coming up pretty soon. And what do you think, looking at this team now, I mean, what do you think the needs are for the trade deadline?
A starting pitcher. I mean, they would like to have a left-handed reliever. You know, in a perfect world, they would make a mega deal with the Pirates for Gerrit Cole and Tony Watson. But, you know, the problem with that is, you know, we all thought Tampa Bay was going to be trading a starter. Well, they're in contention. They're probably not going to trade. I think Sonny Gray is somewhat back. He
right.
could be dealt. Jose Quintana, I think the feeling is that the White Sox GM Rick Hahn's going to not trade him this year, going to go through the season with him and trade him after the offseason. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But and the other part of that is, you know, the Astros have a deep farm system. The Dodgers think they have the best farm system they've ever had. Who's going to – whatever starting pitcher is traded, the price is going to be high.
Right, right. As a person who's from Houston, how good is it to see the Astros not only win but get their fans back?
It is good. It's a process to get them back. On this last 10-game homestand, they averaged 30,000. They were drawing 35,000 for the weekend games. And the TV ratings have quadrupled. I mean, they a couple of years ago had zero TV ratings. Now, some of that was distribution, obviously. But, yeah, people are fired up. And like I said, it's not just winning. You know, it's – I mean, if you can't root for Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve and George Springer, then you don't get it. And, you know, like – Dallas Keuchel has this beard, and it's become identifiable. I think he's tired of it. I think he would cut it off, but it's become so much a part of his identity that he has to keep it. So, yeah, it's cool to see that ballpark full again, the way it was back in 2004 and 2005 when they were playing deep into October.
Talk about the job A.J. Hinch has done. It's good to see him get a second chance after what he went through in Arizona. Talk about A.J. Hinch.
Yeah, and he said the other day, I'm writing about this now, that what he learned in Arizona, it was a disaster. And his career record is now back above 500. He got there on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
293 on Saturday,
right.
And they've won three in a row since then. Took 500 games to get back to 500. And what he's learned is you got to have relationships with players. You can't just tell them what to do. And he said no matter how long you've played in the big leagues, no matter how long you've been around the game, that's part, you know, when you manage, you think, well, I got to manage the bullpen. I got to have a lineup and all this stuff. But you have to have relationships with every player. And that's the one thing he's learned. I'm telling you, Bill, you and I have been doing this a long time. And we have a TV guy here named Bill Brown who was around Sparky a lot. And I obviously knew Earl Weaver and Frank Robinson very well.
Yeah.
I haven't been around a manager that's more impressive in terms of all managing a bullpen, collaborating with the front office, you know, which is very data-driven and wants to have a hand in defensive alignments and lineups and all of that stuff, wants to have a voice. And also managing the personalities in the clubhouse. He is really, really impressive with the way he's done it.
You know, I'll tell you, if I had my way, I would love to see the Astros go all the way this year because, you know, all these years I've watched them for a long time. They had all the superstars like the Rusty Staubs, the Joe Morgans, the Jeff Bagwells, the Craig Biggios, but they haven't been able to win it all. I like to see them win it all once in a while.
Yeah, I would too. You know, 1998 is still the one that sticks out because they get Randy Johnson at the trade deadline. And, you know, you have two Hall of Famers, Bagwell and Biggio, at the prime of their careers. You have Randy on an already good pitching staff. That one stung to go and get eliminated by the Padres. Then in 04, 05, 06, when you had Pettit and Clemens, who really sort of changed the mindset. They got to the World Series in 05, but they were swept by the White Sox. So, yeah, and it's you know, and you only have a window, you know. I know football coaches used to tell me this. In a season – there are seasons when you catch lightning in a bottle and everything goes right, and you think, well, we'll be in contention for five more years. But you don't know that. So when you got a chance to win, you try to win. And that's why I think they'll be really aggressive in going for pitching because they look at this team and say, we've got a chance to win a championship. I mean, on Memorial Day, they're down 8-2 and score 11 runs in the seventh inning.
That was amazing.
Against a good Minnesota team. So when you're on a magic carpet ride, you got to run with it as long as you can.
Richard Justice, listen, as always, thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Bill.
My next guest is manager Craig Counsell, who has the Brewers in first place in the National League Central. The winning started last September. Enjoy the podcast. I'm with one of the best managers in baseball, Craig Counsell of the Brewers. Craig, thank you so much for being on the show. Craig, as we record this, the Brewers are in first place in the NL Central. And what's the reason behind it?
Well, I think anytime you win baseball games, it's because you've had a lot of players do good things. And so, for us this year, we've had a lot of players contribute, and I think that's what you need. And offensively, the thing I liked coming out of spring training is I thought we had a deep position player group. It wasn't just, one guy or two guys that we had to have play well. I thought we had a really strong, group of guys not in the starting lineup. So those guys have been really important to it. But a guy like Jesus Aguilar or Hernan Perez that have really, been important players for us. So we've had a bunch of guys offensively contribute. And then from the pitching perspective, our guys in the bullpen that we were counting on, Jacob Barnes, Corey Knebel, and Carlos Torres have all been really, really good. Starting wise, we've got solid performances from a whole bunch of guys. Chase Anderson, Jimmy Nelson, Matt Garza's done a nice job. We finally got Junior Guerra back. We survived his absence, and so I think we don't probably have that ace, that number one, but we have a solid core of starting pitchers.
The one thing I notice about this team, they play the way you used to play. They scrap, and do you agree with that?
I don't know. I think what we've done a good job of is we're a young team, and we use that kind of youth to our advantage. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to call it a disadvantage. When you're young and inexperienced, I think we've used it to our advantage, and we've used it to create energy, to create a lot of life, to have fun, as much as anything, to just have fun. And so I think that's, what some people want to call a disadvantage and something that you're not going to be good at. We've used it, we've kind of turned it around, and I think made an advantage for ourselves.
The one thing I noticed, it really started last year towards the second half of last year. You guys really showed improvement. And tell me what you saw then, and now it's traveling to this year.
Yeah, kind of the same things you're talking about, and I think that's a good observation, because I thought, we finished the last month of the season very strong, had a winning record in September. And really, it was kind of the same thing. It was, we created this little energy with our youth, I thought, that was fun. It was fun. It was energetic. It was kind of just come in here every day and get after it. And it's carried over this year. I think we've balanced out the team a little bit in some areas, which has made us a little better, and added some left-handed hitters to our lineup. But it's the same young group. I think we went into the season with 12 position players with less than 1,000 plate appearances in the big league. So, that energy and that prove yourself kind of every day mentality, because I'm not a full-time big leaguer. We still kind of got that going here.
Now, talk about your team has had its share of injuries. And, with Braun and Eric Thames, even though he's playing, he's been slumping since his injury. How do you get over that, and what's ahead?
Well, I always think that whenever, you sit in your own – for your own team, you think you have injuries. Every team's got injuries. So it's more of how do we, it's not complain about injuries. It's kind of like we're going to have them, and how do we, kind of cover up when we do have them. And how we've done that is that we have a deep position player group. So when Braun's been out and he's missed, close to half of our games now, Eric Thames has gone out there sometimes, and Jesus Aguilar has played first base and done a wonderful job. Or Hernan Perez has gone out there and played left field, and he's been an incredible defender out there, and in addition to a guy that has hit in the middle of the lineup for us. So I think we all have injuries. The most impactful injury was the Junior Guerra injury. I mean, you lose your opening day starter, and you're – you know, on the first day of the season, and you're saying, oh no, this is trouble. And some guys have Matt Garza's come back and filled in really good for him, and then we moved Willie Peralta to the bullpen to create a Stotcher Jr. So we've covered up and kind of switched some pieces around, but still covered up in their absence.
What improvements would you like to make the rest of the way?
Yeah, I think as we go, I think always your bullpen is something you'd like to shore up. They've pitched really well at times, and you know, right now the kind of the guys that we've got to kind of get back to some establishing some, you know, better I'd like to establish some better roles for some guys kind of in the tie games and losing game situations. I think offensively you're always just kind of looking to get guys, you know, they're not always going to be the best version of themselves, but you're looking for consistency from guys. We're going to score runs if we can get guys just kind of doing what we expect them to do. I think we've got a group that's going to score a lot of runs. So, you know, you're always kind of looking to get a couple guys going with the bat, and I think that's, you know, Jonathan Villar is probably the big guy for us. If we can get him going and get him back up to the top of the lineup. He was so dynamic for us last year. Does things that, you know, really very few leadoff hitters in the game can do. He struggled a little bit this year, so getting him going would be a big help for us.
What has been your most pleasant surprise this year? This man said, wow, I didn't expect that.
I think, you know, our catching has probably been our biggest surprise this year. They've offensively just been outstanding. I've seen some, you know, they're probably top of the National League, maybe top of the big leagues, close to it in a couple categories. And most people can't name our catchers who they are. So, we obviously traded Jonathan Lucroy last summer at the deadline. We traded Martin Maldonado this winter. We acquired, you know, Jet Bandy with the Maldonado trade, and Manny Pena came in the Frankie Rodriguez trade the previous winter. So, you know, two guys with about a half a year experience in the big leagues, and they've really done well. I mean, they're both offensively been outstanding and done a nice job learning the league as they go and handling our pitching staff.
What does your heart say deep down about this club? You're ahead of the Cubs. They're the world champs. Can you be consistent the rest of the way? What your heart says?
Yeah, I mean, I'm my heart says I'm glad we're in this position, you know, and looking forward, it makes coming to the park really exciting, and it makes it, you know, we know we're gonna have a fun summer with our fans in Milwaukee. So, you know, we've taken the mindset that, and again, it's because of youth, I think, is that you just take the mindset, you come to the park, you enjoy each other's company, you have fun competing with each other, you have fun in the dugout, you have fun during the game. Yeah, you get better every day because as young players, I think what's exciting to me is that these guys are getting better. It's not like these guys are, you know, this is who they are. They're veteran players. You know, we're trying to keep them healthy. These guys are still getting better. So it's a team that I think can get better as the season goes. And I don't think we've overachieved at this point. You know, I think we've just kind of played who we are, and I'm hoping we can you know, maybe play a little better, really.
If things go the way it is now, you guys will be eligible, you know, to get players for the trade deadline. And what do you want to get before the trade deadline?
I don't really look at it like that. I mean, I look at trying to get this group better because, like I said, I think there's room for them to get better, and they're all kind of in that mindset of you know, I think what we've done is kind of create. Don't ever get in that mindset that says like I got this. You know, it's the mindset that says no. What can I be better at, and what can I do better? And so I'm looking forward to. I don't know that we need stuff from the out players from the outside. I think we have a chance to get each of these players better, and that'll make us better. And that's what I'm kind of looking forward to, and I think is the possibilities of.
Final question is managing what you expected. When did you realize that I want to manage?
I think whenever you take jobs like this, it's always more than you expected. You know, every job is a little more than you expected, and that's good. And I love the challenge of it. It's been a blast. I grew up in this organization. My dad worked for the Brewers when I was a kid, so I live in Milwaukee. So to be able to manage this team is a real honor for me. It's something I think, when you're playing, I think people start telling you, oh, you might be able to be a manager. You could be a manager. You might be good at that. You start kind of looking at the game a different way. You start talking to your manager as a player and hear them talk and how they think. And it kind of just evolves into that place, I guess. And I'm fortunate enough to be sitting in one of these seats, and I'm loving every minute of it and love the challenge we have with it every single day.
Craig Counsell, thank you so much.